Today on Wings, apostasy. What is it? Why is it? And why is it scaring governments and people around the world?
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Being against the dominance of any religion in political life can be a difficult and in some places a life-threatening experience. One label for that is apostasy. A brave producer in Australia carefully discusses this in an episode of her program Accent of Women. Here is that episode, Apostasy is a Feminist Issue.
Hello and welcome to Accent of Women, a show by and about women from diverse cultures and languages right across the world. I'm Giselle Hanna. Today on Accent of Women, we look at apostasy, the practice of changing or leaving your religion. Apostasy is a critical demand for the international workers' movement. It goes to the heart of collective consciousness, especially working class consciousness. It's about breaking the chains of religion that suppress and oppress, particularly women. But it's also an extremely difficult conversation to have in this political climate. Atheism, and the rejection of religion entirely, arises with scientific and technological development. And these two things are often conflated with Western progress. So then the conversation about apostasy is often appropriated by liberals, right-wing feminists, and quite frankly, racists. And yet apostasy is a critical demand of the international workers' movement. Today on Accent of Women, we attempt to have this conversation. There are progressives right across the world challenging the hold of religion on their lives, their societies, and their struggles for liberation. They live in places like Egypt, Iran, Afghanistan, India, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia. These socialists, these progressives in these countries require our solidarity. They require it in exactly the same way that Muslims under attack in Australia, the United States, Canada, New Zealand, Germany, France need our solidarity in defence of their right to practice their religion. Zadia Hamid is my guest on today's program, and she's from the Council of Ex-Muslims of Britain. Quoting directly from their website, "We non-believers, atheists and ex-Muslims are establishing or joining the Council of Ex-Muslims of Britain to insist that no one be pigeonholed as Muslim with culturally relative rights, nor deemed to be represented by regressive Islamic organisations and Muslim leaders. Those of us who have come forward with our names and photographs represent countless others who are unable or unwilling to do so because of the threats faced by those considered apostates, punishable by death in countries under Islamic law. By doing so, we're breaking the taboo that comes with renouncing Islam, but also taking a stand for reason, universal rights and values, and secularism. Whilst religion, or the lack thereof, is a private affair, the increasing intervention of and devastation caused by religion, and particularly Islam, in contemporary society, has necessitated our public renunciation and declaration. We represent a majority in Europe and a vast secular and humanist protest movement in countries like Iran." End quote. Today's Accent of Women treads very, very closely on the edges of racist discourse. Being the radio presenter that I am and firmly believing that I am not a racist, I don't think this show crosses that line, but you might disagree. I always welcome your feedback, but this week particularly, I welcome your critical thinking and your harshest criticisms of the politics on this week's show. Because the person I'm interviewing is an ex-Muslim, the dominant discussion of the show in relation to apostasy is in relation to exiting Islam. The Arab world is the global target of imperialism today. The scapegoating of those that come from the Arab world, especially those that are predominantly Muslim, is rife in imperialist countries among the right-wing fascist forces and vigilante groups popping up all over the place. It is correct to interrogate and criticise Islam in the same way we criticise Christianity, Hinduism, Buddhist fundamentalism, such as what we are seeing in relation to the Rohingya crisis in Myanmar. But I admit the focus on Islam and Muslims on today's show does skew the discussion a little bit. So that's the preamble. Now, here's Sadia Hamid.
I want equality for everybody, and I think class politics is really, really important. I found socialism and feminism whilst I was at uni, because we're not taught about that kind of stuff in schools. In fact, politics is completely not allowed in schools. And I think that's harmful to us anyway, the fact that we're uninformed about what we're supposed to be voting on. I think that's a serious attack on the general population.
One of the reasons that you're in Australia at the moment is on a speaking tour to talk about the treatment of women and others under Islam. It's a very controversial topic. Mm-hmm. It's very hard for the left to recognise this as a left-wing conversation. And in fact, this conversation in and of itself has right and left-wing elements. Mm. You're saying that the way that you speak about the issue, the persecution of those under Islam that don't necessarily agree with the tenets of Islam, you're saying that your criticism of that is from a left-wing point of view and from a rights point of view. People should be entitled to believe in whatever they want and live their lives the way that they want. So to begin with, why don't you tell me a little bit about those experiences and the kinds of things that you're talking about while you're here in Australia? Then I also want to look at the criticisms you've received for saying those things.
Sure. I want to separate the notion of criticising ideas and criticising individuals. There are some harmful elements in Islam, and I, as an ex-Muslim, am viewed as an outsider, whereas we do have individuals, Muslim individuals, that are part of our movement, that support our movement, that say, yes, there are problems within Islam, and they're fighting from the inside, but they are also treated as apostates for not agreeing with every single element of Islam. And I was given a fantastic metaphor for it by my partner, who said, you know, we've made huge gains in terms of, you know, the harms that smoking has on the person, the health detriments of smoking, but that doesn't mean that we're saying that all smokers are bad. And in the same way, we want to talk about some of the harmful elements of Islam, but without criticizing Muslims. We don't want to vilify Muslims. Most of our family members, the people we've grown up with, are still practicing Muslims. We have no interest in galvanizing hate against those individuals, but we do want to talk about the fact that there are some very violent, oppressive, misogynistic, homophobic ideas within Islam.
That metaphor breaks down a little bit for me for a few reasons. I mean, and I know metaphors are just symbols of what we're trying to say, so I don't want to get stuck in the minutiae of that metaphor. But, you know, cigarettes are a product that was created by a company whose job it was to make money off the sale of these products. So there were a bunch of deceptions in the sale and marketing of that product, and then massive, massive litigation to prevent this product coming off the market. Religion serves a different purpose in society. Still, there is an analysis under capitalism of the role of religion. I know you're focused on Islam because you are a former Muslim yourself, mm-hmm. and I am a former Coptic. So mm-hmm. the Coptic tradition in Egypt is very, very oppressive, misogynistic, mm-hmm. and so on. And so I think we could probably come up with identical criticisms of the Coptic tradition as well as Islam in relation to its treatment of women. Female genital mutilation is rife in the Coptic tradition as much as it is in the Muslim tradition.
And it's the same in Kenya, for example. Kenya has a Christian population and a Muslim population. Both populations practice FGM. The reason the Council of Ex-Muslims focuses on Islam, and we don't focus entirely on Islam, I do have to say that. We focus more on it because we are from that background, and we face more of a challenge criticizing Christianity. Although we do it, it seems easier. The criticism of Islam has been conflated with racist attacks on Muslims. And I've already said we have no interest in racism. I mean, although I sound like a Westerner, I look like another brown girl. You know, nobody knows until I open my mouth, until I say anything, nobody knows who I am. So I experience racism, and most of our members experience racism. We oppose racism, xenophobia, far-right politics, absolutely. But we also want to talk about the oppression that we faced and are still facing. You know, there are apostates being murdered still to this day. Countless apostates and blasphemers that just for speaking out or even having challenged something, they're still Muslim, they're still religious, for having asked a question or inquired about something, are accused of blasphemy and then punished as such.
I want to come at this from a different perspective, though. You're self-identified as a socialist and a feminist. Mm-hmm. In socialism, in Marxism, there is an analysis of the role of religion in the state for workers. Mm-hmm. You know, the famous line from Marx that religion is the opiate of the masses. That quote, what Marx actually says when he's talking about that is this: religious distress is at the same time the expression of real distress and the protest against real distress. Religion is the sigh of the oppressed creature, the heart of a heartless world, just as it is the spirit of a spiritless situation. It is the opium of the people. The abolition of religion as the illusory happiness of the people is required for their real happiness. The demand to give up the illusion about its condition is the demand to give up a condition which needs illusions. So if you look at that quote in its context and we understand the role that religion is playing in the world, we can see that actually as the pressure increases, as economic pressure, as violent pressure, as imperialist, that the counter-imperialist forces are imposing on people, religion rises as a crutch for people. So if you look at the war that the US is waging against the Middle East over oil, so an economic war, and then we see the only place, the expression of real distress and the protest against real distress expressed as this holding on to Islam. And then you see Islam become a political force in opposition to it. Surely that is a way to understand what is happening in the rise of Islam with its fundamentalism, with its violence, with its need to control the people, the Muslims, in order to hold them to this position as a way to fight against imperialism.
I view religion as an unhealthy crutch. You know, I think it's an easy avenue to take when that's so readily accessible. Religion is everywhere. People talk about it all the time. Politics isn't. We taught about politics in school. I don't know if it's the same here, but for me, at school, I wasn't taught politics. I learned politics as an adult. So I didn't know that there were other avenues that I could take to challenge the oppressions that I was seeing of workers, of women, of the most vulnerable in our society, the disabled, the poor. So when I learned politics, I could happily leave religion behind because I didn't need that crutch that actually didn't do anything. Prayer's not going to do anything. How often have your prayers been answered? You know, but politics, get into politics and challenge those that are in power, that are abusing us, that are breaking us and giving us unhealthy ways of managing the abuses that we're experiencing, the stark inequality that exists within our society. Prayer isn't going to do anything. You've got to challenge those in power.
See, I agree with you. Here is the thing. I agree. And I am anti-religion. Mm. And I am an activist that is currently involved in campaigns against Islamophobia, against the rise of the far right. I'm an anti-fascist organizer. I've given my life to these kinds of campaigns and disputes. And I've lost arguments in this particular area. I've argued for the right to be religious simultaneously with the right to not be religious. Mm-hmm. When the same-sex marriage debate was at its height, at the peak of it, I pushed for the arguments of the right to get married and the right not to get married. Mm. Because for me, those things, the corollary must also be something that we fight for, given what those institutions represent.
And we do. We do. We always stand for the right for anybody to believe and disbelieve. But I think that one is being pushed more so than the other. That's where the problem lies.
I guess it almost becomes a question of strategy and tactics. So I gave you that quote from Marx in its context. You know, people reduce that quote to religion is the opium of the masses, but in its context, you can actually see the detail and the nuance that he is trying to get across with this. Mm-hmm. If religion is the expression of something else, surely the target of the activism must be this something else for which religion is the expression, rather than going for religion directly. So fighting against war, fighting against that oppression.
And we do all of that. We absolutely do all of that. We understand that we have to deal with the symptoms of the problem, not just the problem. And we do all of that.
And on community radio stations right across Australia, you're listening to Accent of Women. I'm speaking with Sadia Hamid from the Council of Ex-Muslims of Britain. Sadia is in Australia on a speaking tour, talking about the importance of supporting Muslims that are seeking to exit their religion or change their religion. I've dominated this conversation quite a bit with all of my criticisms and feedback. What I do want to get, though, is actually some of the points that you wanted to get across in your speaking tour here.
I think the key message is, you know, that criticising the beliefs doesn't, it shouldn't be about the believers, and it isn't about attacking the believers. We have this with Christianity. We can talk about some of the ludicrous ideas within Christianity, the rule of thumb. You know, that's a laughable rule now. However, when we talk about passage 434 in the Quran, where you can beat your wife lightly, I was debating on the drum a couple of days ago, and exactly that. I was talking about passage 434, and the presenter went, "Oh, but it says lightly. Why should you be able to beat an individual at all?" And this defensiveness, we're not attacking you as individuals. We are attacking the ideas that you have.
What kind of work is the Council of Ex-Muslims of Britain engaged in a day-to-day level?
Annually, we support about 800 ex-Muslims a year. 50% of the ex-Muslims we support are from the international community, so they could be getting in touch with us from anywhere in the world with various issues, and they might ask for support, advice, any kind of information. 25% of the cases that we support are ex-Muslims that have gone to a safe country and are asking for information or advice around refugee or asylum seeker situations. And then the remaining 25% are UK-based or like sort of in a safe country where they're not experiencing direct threat from the state.
If a woman in Pakistan made contact with you who was seeking to exit Islam, what would the response of your organisation be?
We first ask them if they were safe. That would be the primary concern. I guess we use this, a lot of the same terminology as the LGBT movement. So there's a lot of closeted ex-Muslims because it's just not safe for them to come out. So if they haven't already come out, we suggest that first they assess the risk, because the last thing we want is any harm to be done to them. If it's safe for them to come out, then yes, indeed, do come out. But they have to, we talk about risk management, how we assess the impact that they could experience. We ask them if they are, if anybody does know, and if they trust the people that do know, and what they want to happen next. We ask them. We can't tell them what they should be doing, but we ask them what they want next. And if that is leaving the country, then we give them the information and support about seeking asylum in other countries.
And do you help with those asylum applications?
So we don't help with asylum applications. We don't have the capacity to do that. We do write supporting letters for people that do need them. And we also advise on all the body of evidence that they've got to collect. And that would include any threats or violence that they have received. But within that, the country's penal code around blasphemy and apostasy is key as well. And for some people who aren't able to go to, say, a Western country that has that doesn't have Islamic, that isn't a Sharia-based legal system, we advise in the first instance going to perhaps another Islamic country that might be easier to get to, where they don't have family and friends, where they can almost be somebody else for a short while in between. We also campaign around issues of secularism. We want to see religion and the state as two separate entities. We campaign for a secular education system, a secular legal system.
And these campaigns for secularism, who are they targeted at?
We target our politicians.
So the campaign for secularism is actually against effectively a Christian dominated United Kingdom.
We have parallel legal systems, we have faith-based schools, and what that says to us is that and that does feel racist, you know, that you coloured folk can go and have your own separate schools and we'll have our normal state schools for us, and that the legal system was designed for our white kids. You guys have your own legal systems. So it's undermining the existing state-based systems, but it's also creating a kind of very insular communities. So we are targeting, we're fighting on several fronts, really.
When people come to you who are seeking to exit Islam as an institution, so separating themselves from Islam,
mm-hmm.
What is their experience? What are you dealing with? Why is that a difficult thing to do, particularly in the UK, if they've made it that far?
So in terms of Islam, what the Quran says and what various hadiths say is that you should be executed for blasphemy or apostasy, so leaving Islam. Apostasy is a posh word for leaving religion, not just Islam. So internationally, there's obvious risks, especially in countries that have Sharia-based legal systems. In Britain, we've had various honour killings because parents have different ideas to their children and they feel like they can't control them. They face honour crimes, so honour-based violence, and they face forced marriages. And a lot of ex-Muslims face being disowned by their family, which comes with various mental health issues. You start grieving the loss of your family whilst you're alive and whilst they're still alive.
I actually do know that. But not from a Muslim point of view. When I was 19, I came out as a lesbian and was kicked out of my home. And my godbrother was excommunicated and his marriage was annulled. I mean, that was necessary. He was married to a woman.
Mm.
But these things, then, I mean, we've covered this, but I do want to emphasise it. It's not Muslim specific. You know, the hold that religion has on people is religion that has the hold, not Islam particularly. I wonder if you and the group has considered expanding the religious base of that.
And we do. Our movements, we've got two movements that run alongside each other. One is the Council of Ex-Muslims of Britain, and one is called One Law for All, which challenges any faith-based schools, any faith-based legal systems, particularly that disadvantage some of the most vulnerable members of their society. I mean, in Britain, not only have we got Sharia, they call themselves Sharia councils, but the word Sharia means Islamic law, and they operate like courts. They pass judgments like courts. And the first one came about in 1982. Not only that, we have Beth Din's. I've worked with clients that have experienced discrimination in Jehovah's Witness. They have their own councils. And I won't go into the details of the case. I guess that's unfair. But certainly it's always women and the most vulnerable in those societies that are disadvantaged in those systems. So we do fight on several fronts. It's not just a case of we're constantly attacking Islam. We do attack any religious institution that abuses the hard-won human rights.
Sadia Hamid from the Council of Ex-Muslims of Britain. Sadia is in Australia on a speaking tour, talking about the importance of supporting Muslims that are seeking to exit their religion or change their religion. Today's topic of apostasy was a difficult one for me as a lifelong anti-racism activist and campaigner. And apostasy is a really important issue for me and my life, having left the Coptic faith in pursuit of socialism. If you have a criticism or critique of this week's Accent of Women, I really do invite your feedback. Write to me at accentofwomen@gmail.com. Who knows, I might even organise some public meetings in my hometown of Melbourne, Victoria, where these issues get discussed more fully. Don't worry, if it does come to that, I will definitely record the discussion and broadcast them here on Accent of Women. But that is all we've got time for on today's program. Accent of Women is produced in the Melbourne studios of Community Radio 3CR with the financial assistance of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. The show is distributed nationally via the Community Radio Network with special thanks to the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia. If you want to get in touch with the producers of the show, you can write to us at accentofwomen@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter or like our page on Facebook. If you want to hear this show again or any of our previous programs, you can download the podcast from 3CR's website. That's 3cr.org.au. Go to the Accent of Women page and follow the links to this week's show. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Giselle Hannah and I look forward to your company again next week.
This episode of Accent of Women has been shared to the Canada-based community radio series Wings. You can contact Wings by email, wings@wings.org, and find our back editions on facebook.com/wingsradio and wingsradio.org/wordpress. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Wings series producer Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.